Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
We're just here walking around. We're gonna go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Hit him. Go get that one, Henry.
Right here.
Boom!
Size of that deer.
Hey, another week, guys. Thank you for joining here, me here on Michigan Wild. Another week, another episode. Just keep popping these things out. It's a lot of fun getting to be this time of year because people are shooting turkeys and got some good stories. Talking about some turkey kills here in the next few weeks, including this week's episode. It is with return guest Jake Bollinger. Man, dude, I kind of followed him on Facebook for a while, and we did a podcast, I want to say October, maybe early November last year. He shot a buck on his property. He ended up having to recover it with a paddle boat. Pretty crazy story. If you want to check out that episode, it's the paddle boat buck, and that was, yeah, probably October, November of last year. But yeah, Jake's really into habitat improvement. He has been working on his farm. He has been doing a lot of swamp habitat, which I think is pretty cool, and he's had like some good success with doing that, you know, by creating structure in places he wants structure, creating like pinch points and those kind of things. And also he's been this year, and I think last year a little bit too, primarily ag fields all around, you know, cash crop farming, and he's slowly been turning that into better habitat. And it's every guy that listens to this, they can't hear the excitement and how he likes doing that. I think all of us think of that, the day that we can have some property where we can do all these cool things. And he's trying a lot of different stuff, and he definitely educates himself and does a really good job and puts forth a really good effort. And, you know, seeing him have success is pretty encouraging for me. It's like, okay, hey, when I and ready to pull the trigger on some of this stuff. I know there's a wealth of knowledge and a lot of guys out there who have been doing this for a while that you can rely on and, you know, ask questions and kind of continue to build that those relationships. I mean, dude, it's a lot of fun doing this habitat stuff and deer hunting in general and all this outdoor activities because there's a lot of like-minded people out there. Easy to become friends with them. So thanks, Jake, for joining Michigan Wild once again. It was a fun conversation. Congrats on your turkey. Pretty crazy story. And if you follow Jake on Facebook, he's got the video on Facebook. So pretty cool thing, and that was a fun conversation. All right, I'm going to lead right into the partners. Vitalized Seed, spring food plot season is here. I mean, me and Jake kind of talked about that a little bit here in this podcast. Get thinking about it, right? I mean, some of my seeds showed up today that I'm going to use in some food plots. And then also I am going to be a Vitalized dealer, which is pretty cool. Talk about that here in this podcast. I have to put my order in this weekend here. And yeah, I'm assuming I'll have that stuff showing up pretty quick. So if you're local to me in the Grand Rapids area, you can hit me up on social media or, you know, you can email me michiganwildpod@gmail.com. That's in the show notes. And yeah, we'll meet something up. If I got to meet you somewhere, whatever, we'll get you some seed. But man, I really like Nitro Boost. There's a lot of ideas you can use it for. It's just another good product and it's part of the 1-2 punch, right? Building soil. So it's good for wildlife, good for the dirt, all that stuff. DH3 just had, just was talking to Kevin. He's about ready to get some shipments in from some stuff for his new product and then just getting ready to put this stuff for sale for the year. So if it's something you're interested in, I know he does sell out of that product, but yeah, dude, box scrapes, love them. I can't wait to start firing up some more of these scrapes. Already got a couple locations in mind to start some new areas and see if I can get what I think I'm going to get on them. A lot of fun. Go check out DH3. Wildlife Legend Tags are going to be shoot that turkey, man. I know we've only went one time for Henry. He's been pretty busy with soccer and all that stuff, timing. So we didn't go this week at all in the evenings, but definitely trying to locate some birds for him. Have a couple ideas of what to do. But anyways, his first turkey is going to be mounted in some way, shape, or form. Don't know what. I mean, going to kind of leave that up to him. But yeah, Wildlife Legends Taxidermy, man, they do top-notch work, say it week in, week out. And I mean, just anything else that we want to talk about here is this time of year, if you need to maybe do any sort of archery tweaks, like the weather is just starting to get warm, don't put it off. Go shoot your bow. I mean, if it's something that you're like, man, I don't feel like my bow is really this, you know, set up right, or you know, maybe last year you're kind of like, man, my string's looking kind of gross and should maybe replace that. You should be thinking about some of your archery stuff like right now, like maintenance and going to a local archery shop and getting some of the stuff taken care of. And I think the reason why I want to bring that up is it's kind of twofold. The shop may not be, they could still be pretty busy, but they may not be swamped like they are in the fall. So you actually might get an opportunity to kind of develop a little bit better relationship with maybe the owner of the shop or one of the techs and, you know, ask them some questions. They might have some really good pointers. Some of my, you know, the way I shoot my bow and how I shoot my bow, I've been some little things I've either heard from a tech or listened from a guy that, you know, shoots a bow a lot better than me. And if you get to the right place, some of those guys know their bows and they can give you some pointers, or maybe they can, hey, do you mind watching me shoot a few arrows? And they might give you some little tips or tricks. I mean, all that stuff. And maybe, you know, arrow setups or tuning your bow. I mean, there's a lot of different things that go into archery, and, you know, take advantage of this time of year to do some of those things. Don't wait till the last minute. And then it kind of gives you all summer to shoot. And especially if you're getting ready to go attack or want to do some 3D shooting or anything like that, like, yeah, take advantage of it and do it this time of year. All right, I think that's going to be it, guys. Short and sweet this week. It was another crazy busy week. Not too much for me to do anything like I wanted, but hey, we're getting through it. Sometimes you have weeks that are crazy. Sometimes you have weeks that, you know, you get a little more free time, but I do know, shot my bow a few times. That was really good. Continue to build on those fundamentals that you worked on all winter. Even Henry shot his bow a couple times this week. So, hey, just go out there, make sure you're having fun. And I want to say go shoot your bow, but I don't know how good the weather's going to be in Michigan. So if you find yourself with some free time, fling some arrows. It's a good time. And maybe you got a little bit of time to go do some scouting before green up. All that good stuff. So there's still plenty to do here in Michigan. I know fish trout camp, just a lot of guys had trout camp this past weekend. That's going. Just take advantage of this opportunity before it's 90 degrees and humid. All right, guys, have a good week. You know what to do. Get out there. we go. All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. I have a return guest, even though we're not doing it digitally over a video call. We're just doing a normal old school phone conversation because taking advantage of my road time. But Jake Bollinger, what's going on? Thank you for joining Michigan Wild again.
Not too much. Thanks for having me back on, Nate. I appreciate it.
Yeah, dude, have you been pretty busy coming out of winter? Or, I mean, I know you're a habitat guy, so did you fire the chainsaws up, or did you have to wait a little bit because of the winter weather we were experiencing?
Yeah, no, I did some chainsaw work during the winter. You know, I was cutting down a lot of birch trees, not paper birch, yellow birch, getting rid of them out of my swamp and my my woods because, you know, not really a desirable tree for wildlife. So dropped a lot of those. And then this spring I've been hinge cutting a lot of choke cherries. I got a pile of those and a few oak stands that I want to knock over, and I'm using the hinges to kind of direct some deer travel. So it's definitely been a busy spring for me.
Nice. So like with those birches, you were like just cutting them flush with the ground and pulling them out with the tractor or something? Like you're just totally getting rid of them?
I'm not even pulling the stumps out. These are, you know, I'm just doing some FSI, some forest stand improvement, you know, by getting rid of the canopy. My swamp and my woods that I have is was pretty mature when I bought the farm. So I had some of the larger white oaks cut out and removed just because they were like starting to blow over because the ground is so soft. I didn't like seeing them get lost like that, you know, rotting away in the swamp. So took a few of the bigger white oaks to open up some of the younger white oaks, and then of course getting rid of those birch to again get more sunlight to the forest floor. And now I finally got some grasses and some young oak regeneration and a few other stuff starting to come back up instead of it being a wide open nice. You know, just you used to be able to see 100 yards in any direction, and now you're, you know, 50 yards max.
Oh, that's cool. So now when you said you took some of the bigger oaks, was it like, was there monetary value there too that you're able to get, or was it not really enough for that?
Yeah So I mean, of course, you know, I was very picky on who I had log my property. I wanted, you know, very least intrusion. I didn't want, you know, big roads cut through because I don't have a ton of woods. I'm in heavy ag, so
yeah.
The forest that I do have, I'm trying to, you know, maintain as much as possible and cut out as little as possible. But I just had lost two really big white oaks that were just beautiful, you know, veneer trees, and of course great producers, just from wind blowing them over. And then I started having a few more leaning, you could see them, and then a couple of them started getting cracks, and I'm like, you know, I gotta get rid of these bigger ones to make the younger ones a little better and try to get some money out of them, you know, before they are all cracked up and busted up. So I did a minimum. I only took 22 trees out, you know, so it's not like I did a ton, but I was very, very picky and selective on which ones I took out. So
yeah, and better to have, like you said, them things laying on the ground ain't no good. Like, you know, like a big old tree like that, it's like, hey, at least get some sort of small return out of it before it's worthless.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly it. You know, we needed the income to roll back into the farm, and it released a bunch of other white oaks. You know, that was my thing, is I didn't take, you know, the only ones I have. Now I've just got, you know, probably five or six trees that are going to explode instead of one tree dominating all of them. So,
yeah, absolutely. So let's kind of do a quick overview of who you are and stuff too. Like, I can kind of fill in. I'll fill in what I remember, see how good my memory is. You have this farm that you, I can't remember if it was a family farm or not, but you hunted it for a long time, and it finally became in your possession, and you have a house that's on the property, and essentially you finally have been able to do a lot of habitat work in the last handful of years, but a lot of that was like swamp stuff. So the first time I remember seeing some of your stuff on Facebook was you like creating like architecture in your swamp with like red osier dogwood and like doing some of that stuff. And then the last few years, it seems like you've been really focusing on having like ag field, but turning that into like, instead of cash crop, deer producing or wildlife producing like acreage, opposed to just like this, you know, flat ag field.
Yeah, man. I mean, you nailed it. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, other than the farm wasn't a family farm. We did buy it from a neighbor.
Okay.
And I didn't get to hunt it, but I hunted all the way around it.
Gotcha.
So
that's what it was.
I got to look into it and stare at it for years, and I watched some monsters come through, you know, the cattail swamp, and couldn't shoot them. So, yeah, it was one of those. I remember telling the wife, you know, I'll sell my left testicle to buy that piece of property if it ever comes for sale. So it was wild how it all worked out, and the farm, the owners before, did not want to see it split, and they knew that we were no interest of splitting it in any way, shape, or form. So we made the deal and got it to happen right as lockdown happened. I mean, like, literally everything was shut down. We had to have permission to sign on paperwork because we were essentially homeless. And yeah, it was interesting.
Well, yeah, what a time. That's right. It was a whirlwind when you ended up getting that to work. And yeah, ever since, and then now I look back and I was like, man, I really wish I'd have bought something before that all happened. Because,
right, dude,
right now, property and stuff, I mean, I'm in construction, so I mean, I can't complain because, you know, prices are up on some stuff. But it's just like, oh, can we go back to like pre-COVID prices? That'd be really, really nice.
Yeah, timing was everything. You know, I got real lucky in both of my home purchases and sales, and I was timing for selling. So that's the only way I could afford what we got now. So.
Absolutely. Now, the one thing I remember being really intrigued with for Habitat, we'll kind of stick to Habitat, was you had like a wide open farm field that you were kind of like rolling into. I can't remember if you were doing CRP or if you were just doing switchgrass. What were you kind of doing with that?
You know, honestly, I looked into quite a few of the government programs, and you know, not to get political or anything, but I'm kind of a little bit anti the government. You know, I don't really want them involved in telling me how to plant, what to plant, you know, all that. So the programs were, you know, just kind of turned me off. I just want to go out there and have fun, you know, experiment on my own, take other people's learning and apply it to my own and just have a good time with it. So, yeah, I'm taking what originally was going to be about 75% of my tillable ground and turn that into all wildlife land, but wound up turning into 100% of my tillable ground. The farmer that has farmed this ground forever decided he wanted to retire, so he at the lease just ended. So I was like, okay, well, shoot, there's a bunch more land to get to play with. And my in-laws decided they wanted to actually retire out of farming too, so they have another farmer doing their land. So I said,
wow.
You know what? Yeah, I said, you know what? I'm gonna take advantage of this and just play with it, you know, and have a good time. You know, we don't necessarily need the income from the farming. The ground is not great. It's not, you know, awesome producing ground. It's sandy, stony, so the income wasn't a deal breaker. So here we are now, getting ready to reforest it and plant all kinds of good stuff. A lot of switchgrass, a lot of food plots, and quite a few trees.
Yeah, because it seemed like you had like kind of an idea what you want to do this year in the spring, but that just essentially quadrupled. Like,
yeah.
Or, you know, or like much more. You're going into it hard.
It definitely did. So, you know, I'm basically looking at it as I'm going to kind of turn it into like a three-phase approach, and in each phase is going to be multi-year, you know.
It's gotcha. Not,
there's just way too much work and way too much money that I just can't eat to do all in one year, you know. So it's going to be focus on little chunks, little by little, and try to do certain things. Like this year, I'm really focusing on switchgrass because I want to get some pretty quick borders up and around and breaking up these wide open. You know, I am lucky enough to have some rolling hills, but I still want to have sight lines broke up. So
yeah.
Switchgrass is going to be my main focus this summer.
Man, switchgrass has been such a hot topic on social media this year, I feel like.
Yeah, you know, it's been one of those things. It's been around the habitat world for a long time, but of course, just like everything, it gets trendy and it gets, you know, people see things. And I don't know, I love switchgrass for borders and stuff, but I am not one. You will not see me plant, you know, full fields of switchgrass. I just don't feel that that's really worth the money and time and effort. So I use it all for borders, screens, you know, that kind of stuff, funneling deer. And yeah, it can be expensive too. That's the thing.
Yeah, like it adds up. And you know, like if I think about like habitat and where I like to see deer and stuff, and it's like, okay, when I'm out pheasant hunting out west, if you find some tall grasses and there's like, you know, food around, or there's some like maybe a slough or something, the chances of there being whitetail sign whitetails in there are pretty like high, right? Like they like it. But guess what's nowhere to be seen? Trees or swamp or anything else. Like that's the only cover option they have, so of course they're in there. So I think like Michigan, like there's pockets of the state where I don't think we necessarily lack cover to hold deer per se. You know, there's a lot of places they can hide. It's more of like what you were kind of breaking down, like the mature timber, the wide open stuff is what's the struggle. So I think time and money well spent like creating that, you know, natural cover in those kind of landscapes probably is a little better return on your money than like an oasis of switchgrass, right?
Oh gosh, yeah, yeah. If you're fortunate enough to have forest ground and you can get in there and cut it down yourself or get some money out of it to let it down, you'll get way more browse and way more food per acre, per, you know, whatever tonnage per acre than you will any other way. And of course, create some really good bedding too with this high stem counts. And
yeah,
yeah. I did a buddy let me used to experiment on his property, you know, of kind of however I wanted to do it. We planted, I think it was 6.5 acres of solid switch, and we just realized within like 3 years that the deer movement had decreased. Yes, we did see deer bed in there from time to time, but it just wasn't what I thought was good use of 6.5 acres, you know. So we wound up spraying out sections, and now there's quite a few deer using that and living and bedding, you know, in it much more frequently. So that's,
yeah, because you created edges. Like that's,
yes, exactly.
And that's, yeah, what I always thought it was kind of like every time, like when I first like was like, oh, switchgrass is cool, I never anticipated like this, just why, you know, it'd always be like pockets. And I think the reason why in my head I thought that was because, for example, like I hunted Southern Illinois 1 year, and it's rolling hills, like big woods, you know, there's not a lot of ag, there's a lot of cattle ground. And I really honed in onto this property that was all CRP, and it was like over my head CRP, like nasty briars and stuff. But all I noticed is it just created a buffer or an edge, you know, along these little fingers that jutted out into it, and the deer loved it. And I remember the one day I was like, oh, I'm gonna walk across the middle of this to get to that other point. And I walked across the middle of this, you know, probably 40 acres of CRP, and I found minimal deer sign across the middle of it. It was all on the edges where the timber met it. And it's right. like in my head, it's like, hey, that's like that soft edge, or a lot of guys use these terms, you know, creating edges and, you know, dictating deer movement, and that really works. So if I ever do the switchgrass thing, it's going to be like, I can promise you there's going to be cedar trees mixed in. There's going to be food plots maybe, or trails or something, just to kind of give it kind of edges all around.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, at least in my opinion, and that's exactly what I'm doing with my ground. I'm creating some travel corridors in the field that I'm gonna plant clover and chicory to link multiple smaller and or larger food plots, you know, as destination and some mast trees and stuff like that. And that's exactly the same mission, is to create as much edge and create as much visual sightline breaks as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Make those deer have to move through it to figure out what's going on.
Yep, check everything. You know, spend as much time as possible on there.
Yeah, those days when you, I remember when I was, you know, when I grew up hunting a lot of field edges, and, you know, you bow hunted field edges as well because, you know, alfalfa fields or, you know, anything like that. And I remember, I can't tell you how many times I'd see like a buck or something, you know, pop out of like a low spot, or pop out of like a cedar thicket or something, and just hang out by the edge and then just turn around and go right back in there. And I remember being so disappointed, like, man, Dad, if I had a gun, I could have shot him, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just because that dude just, he could see, hey, I see everything I want to see out here in this field, I'm going back into the cover. So
yep, you're exactly right.
I love that. So how big of an area are we talking, like the first phase here? Like if you were to say like a roundabout acreage, I mean, what kind of stuff are we talking about here?
So I guess my phase one was me messing around in my swamps, getting, you know, birch and all that stuff cut out, planting red oaks, your dogwood cuttings, gray dogwood cuttings in certain areas. That's a little over 25 acres of swamp and woodline, you know, wood area that I'm messing with. And then the second phase of the agricultural turnover is about 35 acres.
Oh, geez.
Yep. So I knew right off the bat that I wanted to take a big chunk because my area is, you know, is big ag. I mean, don't get me wrong. North of the freeway of me, there is the Waterloo State Game Area, and there is some serious chunks of timber and stuff there, of course, for the state area.
Yeah.
And there's a few large tamarack swamps and stuff scattered around, but for the most part, I'm in tillable ground, so cover is really what I was lacking, so that's what I wanted.
Yeah. So now, what are you, so like you said, you know, it's not like you can just go out here and just like, hey, I'm doing all this at one time. You have to kind of, you know, pick and choose. And I think that's a good idea too, because then you can kind of see what works and doesn't work. But like, let's say part of this stuff that you're not doing this year, are you just gonna let it go feral, or are you gonna still like plant like something to eat? Like, is it gonna be like a lot of rye you're planting, or what are you gonna do in the ground? Or are you just gonna be like, hey, I'm letting this thing just take over?
Yeah, no, I'm just gonna let, you know, it's about 15 acres of stuff that I'm just gonna let just go, you know, just for right now. If I decide to, you know, spray it off or mow it off or whatever later to add to it. Or me and the wife are getting into beekeeping, so, you know, we have some hives, we have some areas that we're planting in pollinator blends, you know, several acres of pollinator blends as well. So, you know, who knows? We have some animals. We may pasture some of it as well. So it's just one of those. We're going to leave that section that I was expected to be farmed.
Yeah.
We're just going to leave that to whatever happens with it, happens with it. We're expanding pumpkin patch, sweet corn patch, you know, doing all that stuff for the farm as well.
Dude, that's kind of exciting. I mean, that, like, any, I think any property owner has heard you talk about that. I mean, that's how you get the family on board right there. Like, hey, here we have all these options. We can do this. We can maybe have, like, a little makeshift homestead or whatever. I think that's kind of like, if you can live on a property and do that and still kill stuff on it, like, what more does a guy need?
you're 100% right. That's always been my goal. You know, of course, my property is family first. You know, it's got to be usable for my family in some way, shape, or form. You know, of course, I'm not going to be out on it every day or, you know, doing crazy, but I'll drive the Gator through it. I want my kid to be able to ride his little dirt bike around on trails and stuff like that. You know, I want everyone to be able to enjoy the farm, you know, all year long. So that's kind of the mission. And then, of course, heavy focus on wildlife and deer hunting and turkey hunting specifically.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. Have you upgraded the paddle boat? Or you have any...
No, I did not upgrade the paddle boat, but I did pull it out the other day and tipped it over and emptied it with water, so it's ready for another voyage if I have to.
Ready for recovery if need be. That's a joke because the last episode was the paddle boat buck. You had to go recover a buck in your pond with a paddle boat. Hilarious.
Yeah. So,
you can't,
yeah,
you can't get rid of it. Like, you can't get rid of that now because of that.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I got a stencil on the side of the USS Buck Achiever or something, you know. It'll be there forever just in case.
Oh, that's so great. I love that. That was a cool story. So, yeah, we talked shortly after you shot that buck, right?
Was yeah, when we, I think so, yep.
So then, because we're kind of talking about gun season coming up and stuff. Oh, yeah, how did your walk-in cooler / meat processing build go? Was that completed last year, or were you still working on that?
Yeah, so I still don't have the actual cooler done and everything. Of course, that was another one of those this winter I want to get done and didn't get it done. Mm-hmm. But it will 100% be done before this deer season for sure. But, you know, the butcher shop and all that is fully functional. My brother shot a few deer here and helped, you know, butcher them up here. We did all of our own sausage stuffing, you know, all that good jazz. So yeah, it's going good, man. We've had quite a few parties where neighbors and stuff come over and we're frying up fresh back straps and, you know, fresh sausage and everything, and it's a blast, man. It's absolutely nice. What I envisioned by making this space into a gathering location.
Yeah, dude, if we always got everything we wanted done in the winter, what would we do the rest of the year?
You know, you can't. Isn't that the truth? Yeah, that's the truth.
That's great. So that's cool. Did you, you didn't shoot another buck. You just shot the one buck, or did you end up shooting another one?
No, I'm a one buck, you know, kind of guy. And don't get me wrong, I will hold my tag if I need to for the rest of the season, but it's going to have to be something, you know, really, really major to make me kind of, you know, eat crow or be a hypocrite, whatever you want to call it. But you know, pretty much anymore, if I get lucky enough to get a buck, I'll match that tag with a doe really quickly, just so it's not
temptation.
That, you know, So that's what I did this year. I shot a doe with it pretty quickly, and then went out and filled a few more doe tags.
So now, is that because you just find yourself spend a lot of time just on that, you know, your personal farm, and you don't really, you know, spread your wings across the state? Or is it kind of like, hey, I'm just going to shoot one because I that's what I believe in, or I feel like I'm, you know, because I guess for me, I kind of know what you're talking about, because there's certain properties it's like, yeah, I don't even know if I'm going to shoot a buck, but I might shoot that one. And then if I shot that one, I would never shoot another one unless, and I'll just go hunt, you know, 100 miles away, or go hunt on, you know, something 20, 30 miles away. I try to, like, strategically hunt my locations because I don't want to kill too many bucks on one area, because there's just not that many mature bucks running around, is why.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a part of it. I don't know. I don't necessarily need to have two bucks. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I don't need to have another rack on the wall or another Euro mount or something. For me, it is, of course, if I'm going to shoot a buck, I do want it to be the, you know, more mature or at least upper age class for the area. But when I'm really truly out to fill the freezer, it's there's so many does that I just rather would whack a few does. I have just as much fun shooting a doe and having the camaraderie of my son coming out with me, gutting and bringing up and cooking stuff and all that. So to me, I'm perfectly happy with one real nice buck. That's I guess my opinion.
Well, I really like that because I think that's going to keep you grounded. Like if you know what you like as a hunter, like why you're out there, like if anyone just heard you explain that, I think we all realize what you enjoy and how why you're so passionate about what you do.
I'd like to hope that that's what I at least put out to people. Is I mean, truthfully, I saw, I think it was like the OKS Hunter or whatever put out a memo that said it's more, there's more to deer hunting than, you know, notching a tag or whatever. It's the frosty mornings, the birds chirping, and it's like, that's me. Like, that is, to me, that's it. Like, I get my fulfillment of watching the squirrels running around and all that kind of stuff. And of course, you know, the notching a tag is the cherry on the top. But just waking up in the woods and recentering myself and realizing what's, you know, reality of nature is why I do it.
For sure. And I think it's kind of cool because it's almost like you go back to like how you hunted as a kid, kind of.
Absolutely.
Like, I think that's what by no means am I saying I'm at the same level as other people. Like, for me personally, I was like, I kind of went through like a swing of things. I was so excited and so passionate about just shooting a deer. Didn't matter what it was. Like, I longed to go hunting finally. And then I shot a couple deer and I was like, this is really fun. What's the next step? And it was like, okay, try to like keep, you know, climbing the ladder from age class or size of deer. And now it's kind of like, once you do that for a little bit, it's like, okay, what's the next thing? Like, is the next thing like habitat stuff? Is the next thing like, you know, maybe not being so freaking crazy about trying to shoot the biggest deer you get a trail cam picture of, or, you know, whatever. And I think any and everyone has a similar journey, and it could be a 5-year journey, it could be a 30-year journey. It depends on the hunter. But I do know that even though those years where I ate a lot of tag soup, I still went back to my roots of loving a sunrise, loving a sunset, you know, laughing at the squirrels that are, you know, chasing each other around, and, you know, seeing deer be deer, and like all that kind of stuff really kept me engaged. I think as long as you know what your core values are, no matter what you do around yourself, right, like, oh, I'm passing deer, oh, I'm gonna shoot the first legal buck or whatever that is, I think you're just gonna find more happiness if you know what you want out of the season.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, and I used to get caught up in all that kind of stuff. You know, it wasn't long ago, like you said, of trying to shoot the biggest buck on the trail camera and all that. And then the last 5, 6, 7 years or so, I've just kind of changed to, I'm just going to hunt and enjoy it. You know, if I get super excited and jacked up about a situation and it's, you know, a 3.5-year-old buck, and I really am trying to push myself to you know, letting 3.5s go and only shooting 4.5s, but you know, if it's a really cool situation, I'm perfectly happy with taking a 3.5-year-old, you know, and having those memories. So I've totally shifted my thoughts on this. And, you know, like the land that I'm doing, I want to give more than I take. And that's just kind of how I'm looking at the farm of, I want to provide for a lot more wildlife than I'm taking. But at the same time, you know, of course, I'm going to take some. So
yeah,
that's just
kind of
my motto.
And your family's going to be there and enjoying it. Sounds like your kids already like doing that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that's pretty cool being able to do that. I know, like, my little guy, he's had the ability to shoot a couple deer already at a young age. You know, he's 9. And it's kind of fun to see him go through that. And, like, he's obviously been paying attention to me a lot more than I actually realized. Right? And then if I think about it, it's like, you know, I kind of hunted. Like, when I first started hunting, I was a reflection of, like, my dad and uncle. Because that's who I kind of like looked up to, and how they hunted, I kind of just hunted, right? Or if they said, if my dad's like, yeah, you can shoot whatever you want, guess what? I shot whatever I wanted.
Yep,
you know,
absolutely.
But then you kind of like, oh, what's dad doing? Or what's uncle doing? Like, how come he's shooting the bigger deer? How come he's seeing deer, but I don't see something when I go sit? You know, then you kind of like slowly learn and kind of morph into your hunter. And it's kind of cool to see my little guy kind of like, you know, think about stuff a little differently. Then he'll say stuff and I'm like, ah, he's paying attention, you know. And he's like, I never like turkey hunting right now, because we can kind of go into turkey hunting. But he, last year, you know, I had some turkey success and took a cousin out and she got a turkey and stuff, and he only went maybe once or twice, and he was like, I don't want to wake up early, dad. Well, then going to this year, he kind of like I really want to shoot a turkey, Dad. And I think we're going to have to wake up early. Because, you know, like, he realized that, like, hey, a lot of these guys I'm watching videos of shooting turkeys are getting up in the morning, and they have really good luck in the morning. So it's pretty funny to see him kind of, like, there's a desire there, and then he's willing to do the sacrifice of waking up early to try to get something he wants. So it's pretty cool seeing that progression, yeah.
That's cool. I hope I get to see that with my boy soon. He loves to go out hunting with me already, so I'm hoping it catches hold. He's pretty adamant that he's going to get real good with the 350 this summer and take a deer for youth season, so we'll see. Nice. See if he can do that. That would be absolutely over the moon to see that happen.
It's such a cool... Well, it's unique, right? Because I think me and you were in the age where we didn't get to youth hunt, right? Well, we couldn't hunt with a gun till I was 14. Yep. And, so, like, you know, you have this, like, little man, this little human that's like, I can't believe he can carry it. He can shoot a deer with a gun that's as big as him, you know? So it's like, what do you do? But I know if you pay attention to your kid and if you just let them tell you when they're ready, it's, right. like, super apparent. Like,
yeah, that's exactly what I did with my boy. I didn't push him at all. You know, he'll be 8 this summer, at the end of this summer. And I told him, I said, hey, when you're ready, you're ready. And if you're not, you're not. You know, like, I'm not going to force it on you. Mm. And he started naturally talking about, you know, getting ready to do it.
So. That gets me fired up. Gets me fired. And it's warm enough so you can start shooting guns, right? Exactly, so it's like, you know, get him. Like, I know Henry, he had a little 22 cricket that, you know, I made him shoot that thing a lot just to get, like, you know, good at operating a gun safely and being able to put it on the lay on the ground, and he shot prone and did all these things, and like clay pigeons, and every time he'd go look and see where he shot, hey, is that bolt open, or you know what I mean, just the basic stuff, and just watch him like learn that and get enjoyment. I was like, oh, that brings me right back to when I was out there shooting pop cans with my BB gun, you know, as a kid or whatever it may be.
And, absolutely.
But it is so interesting to see, like with Henry, it was kind of like it went from love to go hunting with Dad and would hunt all the time, but now that he can like punch tags, if he gets his tag punch, he's not near as optimistic to go sit with Dad when he can't shoot something.
That's funny how that works.
Yeah, like, you little bugger, you know. He wants all the glory, is all he cares about.
I can't blame him. We like that too.
Uh-huh. So the 350 Legend, what do you have? What kind of a gun do you have for him with that?
Ruger. Yep, the Ruger. It's the Go Wild edition or whatever. It's nice. Got the Cerakote barrel and stuff. It's a pretty sharp looking little gun, man.
So have you thought of a suppressor for that?
You know, I have, and I have not gotten one, but that is probably on my list to try to get accomplished.
Yes. So the only reason why I'm such an advocate for it, because suppressors are really cool, right? Like, who doesn't want a suppressor? But my thing with him was, how do I communicate with him well when he's wearing earmuffs?
Yeah, true.
So that was like a thing I didn't like. We kind of struggled with that a little bit the year prior. Like, he all of a sudden was like, I want to shoot a deer tomorrow, as we're like on our way up north for opening day. And I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to tell you no. And so, like, he was, like, sitting on my lap, and opening morning, maybe it was the second day, a buck, like, bumped some does out, and they were, like, running all around in circles right in front of us. And, like, at this point, he had shot his .22, and, like, he had shot BB guns, but he never shot, like, a rifle, like, a adult-sized gun, right? So he's sitting kind of on my lap, kind of on the chair. He's got these earplugs. He's got these big earmuffs on, because I always carried those for him. And I'm trying to communicate with him, and he couldn't hear me. So, like, it was really, like, you know, I'm trying to whisper and not be super loud, but also loud enough for him to hear, and, like, I'm pulling one off, and then I'm freaking out if he can hear me or not, like, with the safety. And I was like, okay, that was a rodeo. And then the buck never stopped, so he couldn't get a shot. I ended up shooting a doe that was out there instead, but we ended on a really good note, right? Like, hey, he was frustrated, but, you know, shot a doe, so always try to end the hunt on a high note. But then going into the next year, I was like, okay, he's pretty serious. And sure enough, summertime rolls around, he's like, I want to shoot one. So I was like, well, I have a suppressor for another gun that's multi-cal. Let's get a 350 set up for you. And just being able to, like, stand there and talk to him and work him through a shot, and he doesn't have to wear earmuffs and shoot the gun, dude, it is, like, worth it tenfold to me for that.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, very valid point, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And saves my ears.
Yeah, right.
You know, because as the dads, we ain't going to put no earmuffs in when they're shooting, you know. So.
Right, I know. I've been talking about getting one for my 450, and again, just something I haven't haven't done yet.
Oh yeah. So that anyone listening to this, if you have any kids interested, you know, you, if a kid wants to go hunting, that's two positive things for you. You always can get another gun because the kid needs his own gun, and then you can get a suppressor too, and get a multi-cal one so you can use it on multiple guns.
Mm, you know, perfect.
Just justifying purchases left and right over here.
I like it.
So what? Let's talk about your turkey. I see a picture floating around on Facebook. You smashing a turkey right away. How long was your turkey season this year?
Oh, 12 minutes. That's probably giving it, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 minutes extra.
Oh, the time I looked at my phone. Generous. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. You know, the neighboring farmer had been cutting a lot of wood the last, you know, couple of weeks prior to season, and I have not been seeing turkey, so I was not really all that optimistic. And, you know, it was raining like crazy that morning, so I was like, yeah, I'll just run to the blind and stay dry, you know, instead of getting wet first thing. And I've only hunted turkey hunter for 3 years. I just started. I'm an adult onset turkey hunter or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Got on with my bow. You know, I told myself if I'm going to turkey hunt, it's bow only. And so I go trudging out to my blind, you know, the morning of, and I get about, I don't know, halfway down the wood line or whatever to where I was going to go. And I found this guy, I don't, like some backwoods hillbilly on YouTube that is just cracks me up, but is clearly like a woodsman, right? Like you could just tell this dude has been there, done that. He wasn't like, he's the one that taught me how to turkey call, basically, you know, me watching his YouTubes on the slate call.
Yeah.
So I get a kick out of him because he's just a character. Well, he, you know, he mentioned about hooting owls, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And getting them. So I out of the blue, I like, you know what, I'm gonna hoot like an owl and see, you know, what happens, see what comes of it. Well, I hoot, and next thing I know, I hear a gobble, and I'm like, holy crap, like, it's not far away, and I don't think I'm going to make it to my blind. So I just, I found a real nice oak tree that was right on the field edge with a old railroad tie fence post next to it with some brush and stuff growing, and I just kind of tucked down in there and started on my slate call a little bit, and next thing I know, you know, again, new turkey hunter, I've never experienced anything quite like this. There was gobbles in every direction all the way around me. It was just going wild, and I'm like, holy cow, this is craziness, you know. And next thing I know, it just goes completely silent. You know, the backwoods guy says, get them all fired up on the roost, and then just stop calling and make them come to you or whatever, investigate.
Yeah.
So I stopped calling, and then sure as heck, you know, as day broke and I'm looking through the mature woods, I can see their little white heads, you know, kind of coming through at me, and I'm hunkered down to this tree, and next thing I know, they're like, literally within 5 or 6 feet of me. There's three, you know, really nice strutters, all strutted up.
What? You know,
they clearly had seen me like moving or whatever. So I was in like leafy wear.
Yeah,
leafy wear. And I'm tucked down in. I got some brush. Like I had enough stuff kind of blocking me, and it was overcast. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah,
they couldn't see great, so everything worked in my favor. And just luckily, the third bird kind of hung up on the field edge and must have noticed my decoys. And it started strutting and started spitting. You know, you could hear it. And that got the attention of the other two birds that were, like, right on top of me. I could hear some behind me a little ways, and then some off to my left. And I looked over and saw them, and there was three or four jakes that were kind of coming in. So, you know,
you're just like, you're just surrounded. Like,
oh, literally. Like, I was literally surrounded. Yeah. It was unbelievable how many turkeys for me. Again, first time I've ever experienced anything like this. They were gobbling all around me. It was wild. So they started wrapping around that oak tree, and I knew it was, you know, that was my time to draw.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of held my bow up and drew and waited for them to work themselves around. Well, when they were working themselves around, there was one, I mean, really big tom, probably the biggest turkey I've ever seen beard wise or whatever.
Mm.
And he was the second one in line. Mm-hmm. And I saw, as soon as they started coming out behind that tree and I could see him, I was like, okay, the second one. Well, as soon as the second one gave me a good shot, I saw it had a nice beard on it, you know, and I shot, and all of a sudden I realized the third one was actually the really big one. So they had must have switched positions, you know, when they come around that tree. But needless to say, you know, I put a really good shot on him. He only ran, I don't know, maybe 15 yards and fell over. And then three or four other toms were out there, you know, kicking at him,
yeah, beating him up,
and pulling, and, you know, their buddy up.
So, yeah, so, yeah, so
really cool.
You have that in video, correct?
Yeah, yep. I used the painted arrow, you know, Mac Pro, and used my cell phone, and yeah, I got the shot on film at least. Yeah, I was too nervous to try to film the other stuff because they were too close.
Yeah, right on top of you. It's like, man, this worked way too good.
Yeah, it was wild. And I mean, they were right on top of me. I still don't know how they didn't bust me. Other than the leafy wearing, I was just balled up, so I looked like a bush, I guess.
Yeah, and you were right. You had some good. Sounded like you had some good cover around you. I think that's key in anything, like even whitetail hunting or any sort of stuff. Like as long as you have some back cover and side cover, like it definitely does help. And don't move. Like I mean,
yeah,
Fred Bear, you know, I think's got a pretty good quote about that. So
yeah, right, exactly. You know, you got to pick and choose your times to move. You know, very carefully. And you know, yeah, I shot my very first Tom turkey with a bow behind a tree and no blind. You know, so it was kind of one of those things. That's, might be doing that.
That's fun. That's, I mean, it's a whole nother challenge, right? And like I think that's why. Like, I'm learning, like, the art of turkey hunting slowly and, like, why people like it. Kind of similar to how, like, I'm learning, like guys that really love, like, fishing in the river or fishing in the big lakes or anything like that. It's, right. Like, these little innate things that you don't really realize until you, like, get involved in it. And it's like, okay, I get why this is a desire. I get, like, the reward guys feel for this. And, yeah, chasing turkeys around with a bow or no blinds or, you know, certain type of decoys or certain type of calls, you can kind of challenge yourself in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I mean, that's a lot of fun. I mean, you're right in their grill, right? You're in their space and you just, you know, slip an arrow through one. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. When those two were literally, I am not even exaggerating, when they were within 5 feet of me, I have my phone on in the extended version that's not cut or whatever because I started the videotaping early.
Yeah.
And it's just staring at the tree, you know, because my bow is up against the tree while I'm hunkered down. But you can actually hear him walking in the leaves right next to me, you know, like you can hear the leaves moving as I'm sitting there, and it's like, man, this is, I just remember my heart just pounding, you know, like the gig is up, I'm thinking I'm busted. Yep. You know, everybody tells me how good their eyesight is, the slightest movement and they're gone, and the whole time I'm like, wow, I just screwed up, I should have been set towards the woods instead of towards the field, and it just all worked out.
Yep, you got it. That's cool, man. Well, that's, yeah, that's you know, or it can just be like, hey, there's no big deal killing turkeys on the ground with a bow and no blind. That's what you gotta.
Yeah, right. No, it's definitely, you know,
ride that until you can't no more is what I would be doing.
That's,
all your buddies.
Exactly. 3 for 3 with the bow. You know, it's like, all right, let's keep this rolling. This is pretty freaking cool.
I love it. Well, so yeah, the turkey season was 12 minutes, give or take a few minutes, but that's pretty exciting, huh? So did you do? You have any, like, I know you're like big into processing your own stuff. I mean, what was that? What do you like to do with your turkeys? Do you have anything special you like to do with them? Wild game?
You know, still kind of learning with that. So of course I breasted out and took the legs out, and I just vacuum sealed them for now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cleaned them all up and vacuum sealed them. So I can't say that I have any great recipes yet. The first breast I made from the first turkey was horrible. I must have overcooked that. That was absolutely horrendous. But then kind of improved the last couple of years. So hopefully this year will turn out real well.
Yeah, I've only done, let's see, I've done it in the my favorite way, which I haven't done very much at all. It was actually a bird my wife shot before we were married. And we just did the, you know, breasts rolled, bacon rolled around them in the oven, like low and slow, and that was really good that way. So like I'm thinking this summer I'm gonna cook my turkey from last year, and I might do like, I want to do like a smoked turkey kind of, because yeah. I feel like it's just that meat so lean and so like good. I feel like I could do like a little bit of a smoked turkey breast and something, or
absolutely,
do a couple legs. I think that'd be pretty good, and I think it's something that like, it's pretty hard to screw up. You know what I mean? Like I need easy. You know, point of entry is going to be easy for me in cooking, so I think that's what
definitely
I'm going to do.
Yeah, that's what I did last time. I did a citrus brine with brown sugar, lemon, oranges, thyme, oregano, and then, of course, water. And then I marinated the breasts, both breasts, and then I put them on the Traeger smoker and smoked them, and they turned out really good.
Oh, that makes me feel good. So that means I got a chance.
Yeah, those turned out really good.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Well, all right. So we got deer kind of stuff taken care of. We got turkeys. And now I wanted to talk to you about some spring food plots.
Yeah.
So you are a Vitalize dealer, correct?
Correct. I am. Yep.
And I just became one as well.
Oh,
so,
excellent.
Yep,
welcome.
Yep. But just got some stuff worked out with Jared. I kind of was like, hey, dude, what does it take to do this? And, you know, there's this big list of requirements to be, you know, with Vitalize.
Right.
Funny, not funny, but just kind of joking. But, yeah, it was kind of cool to get to that. And I'm going to be, you know, selling some seed, too. And I know you do in the areas that you're from. But an old Nitro Boost is going to be showing up here pretty soon for me. What does your spring food plots kind of look like? Because we have about, like, what do you say our window is? A month, 5-6 weeks, you know, here yet to kind of plant some stuff?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, this year it seems like it's a little bit ahead, but you never know. We might start getting into the rains and push it off a little bit. Yeah, I mean, you know, I've got, I do have some Northwoods Whitetail Seclusion Blend, clover and chicory. You know, that's of course always pretty good in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
For Vitalize, of course, I do three plots of, well, carbon load last fall. So that's coming in really good right now with the clovers and the rye and stuff. And mm-hmm. that's been holding a pile of deer. So that's pretty much what I have currently for springtime/early summer food plots. And then I will roll into the Nitro Boost here soon. I'm actually moving all my plots around, of course, now that I have the ag land to convert. So I'll basically be starting over again. I'll be putting in Nitro Boost probably here in, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, I would imagine.
Nice. That's kind of what I was thinking, too. Probably get a little sooner than last year. Last year I seemed to do it a little later because it was just a wet spring last year, so I felt like you had a long, like this planning time was like pretty spread out. So I think I kind of did it around Memorial Day weekend, I feel like, was when I did it last year. And yeah, the Nitro Boost plot I did just was like, phew, it took off and did really good. And then the ones, of course, when I did my weed control properly, helped a lot. We tried two plots. We're like, okay, let's do like this one where we'll do this, and then this one we'll try it this way. And it was like super apparent that that little extra money, a little extra effort really pays off in the long term.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. Preparation is key, not only for your food plots, but you know, other stuff, trees and switchgrass and all that stuff. It does make a difference.
Yeah, but I like, now I don't know if I heard you talk about this, but I did the, you know, because like if anyone's like kind of, you know, if you're a food plot guy that's been doing it for a long time, maybe some of this stuff doesn't seem too daunting. But like for me, the last few years, I'm like, this is a lot. Like this is kind of out of my comfort zone. Don't really have everything figured out yet. And then like having the Vitalize 1-2, you know, punch kind of system, like seemed to kind of like the reason I was intrigued is kind of like eased it. It's like, okay, like I can do this in the spring and then I can do this in the fall. And then like I don't have this like crazy amount of weeds, that competition I'm trying to fight every year. Like I just kind of liked it. It seemed to kind of like be simple for me. And then last year what I kind of realized was, hey, I can get the springtime grow was great, all right? Like we had water, and then when the drought came, I was like, well, I don't want to knock all this Nitro Boost down because I got great side cover and there's actually something here. So I did like a half and half, and dude, I really liked that. I left half the Nitro Boost up and it was like a perfect edge.
That's a really good idea. That might be something I play with and toy around with as well, because it does. I won't lie. Every single year, it pains me to kill off a really nice stand of Nitro Boost or a really nice stand of carbon load. But you know, knowing that it's the design of the system, and I agree with you. That is originally one of the things that turned me on about it was, you know, it was simple. It's literally a 1-2 system. You put this one in the spring, you put the carbon, you know, the Nitro Boost in the spring, you put the carbon load in the fall, and you just keep going back and forth. It's like, how much easier can that get? You know, and of course it cuts down on herbicides, and over time it cuts down on fertilizer. So
yes,
you know, for me it was okay, build soil, feed deer, feed pollinators, feed birds, you know, the whole nine yards, and all in one whack. It just made sense to me and makes it easy. So it's just kind of the everything in one ball, you know, it works perfect.
All right, there's our sales pitch, guys. If you're anywhere near me or near Jake, reach out and get you some Nitro Boost, or what else did you say? You have wildlife or real food, or what was the
no,
other one?
No, I'm only a Vitalize dealer, but oh, okay. I do use some Northwoods Whitetails products.
Gotcha.
You know, are those
the guys from the UP?
Yep, John Cobb. Yeah. Yep, that's where I get all my switchgrass from. You know, he's a good, really nice guy, and is very knowledgeable and everything as well. And of course, you know, I started using his clover blends and stuff before Vitalize had their clover and oats and stuff out. So my travel corridors that I'm going to be putting in clover, I will be using the Vitalize clover.
Nice.
And trying that this fall. So
yeah, dude. And I think so. Are you? Do you live? I'm so Elliot. Hubbard? Are you, yep. You know him at all?
I do.
Because he uses a lot of that stuff too, right?
He has quite a different bunch of stuff. I actually just went to his habitat tour just a couple of weeks ago and stuff. He's got quite a different, a bunch of different things. But he's mostly Northwoods Whitetails products.
Yeah, I gotta reach out to him and have him on again too, because we barely touched the surface on some of the stuff he does, and I love seeing all the stuff he puts on Facebook and stuff too.
He's extremely knowledgeable, and has got a lot of years of experience under his belt. That's why, for me, it was a 2-hour and 20-minute travel to get from my house up to his place. But, when Michigan Quality Whitetail Habitat Facebook group put it out that they were holding an event there, I was like, well, I definitely got to go see it, get some ideas. It was nice to see some of his practices and kind of do the similar thing. He was converting ag land over, so it's nice to kind of have that idea. I mean, two totally different terrains, so I will say that. At least it was cool to see some things and how it works and how the deer use it.
And what's cool is it's a guy like us, right? We have our full-time jobs and this is a hobby for us, but we still it's fun to see other people do it, because it's like, well, I could do that too. Like, if he can do it, I can do it. And you see the journey, the progression, and all that stuff. And it's really cool to the community of guys that like to, deer hunters and habitat guys and all that. And it's really fun to see everyone, because we're like-minded, right? So it's easy to relate to them. We like deer hunting, and we want to make our properties better. So, like, we already got two things that we like and we can relate to. So it's always, it's really cool. But, I think there's a lot of, even though I really like Vitalize and stuff, like, there's so many good things. It's kind of like, I almost want to like compare it to buying a bow. Like, the bows right now are so good. Like, I feel like they're so similar. Like, there's not as big of a difference as there maybe were, a decade ago. I think a lot of guys are getting a lot better with producing really good food plot seeds. Back in the day, I think there was a lot of gray areas with some of that stuff. And I think now the people have been catching on, right? So it's just a matter of what you like and who you want to support and all those kind of things. And that doesn't mean you have to be a fanboy of one and I only use this. It's like, no, maybe you want to tweak this, or maybe you want to tweak that, or maybe you want to kind of the give the deer something else this year. But I mean, overall, there's just a plethora of stuff out there that you can enjoy and use and spend your money that way. But guess what? You still need rain and you still need the weather to cooperate in other ways, because it doesn't matter how good your food plot seed is. If you don't got no water, good luck.
And not only that, but soil types, like you hear people, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. Well, it may be on their soil type, but you bring it over to my soil type and it may not, either grow and or the taste or palatability is different, to the deer. So, I mean, you hear it all the time about brassicas, how one place the deer will hammer them and then you go just a few miles down the road to a different soil type or pH and the deer hardly even touch them. So, I'm 100% with you. I'm not really one of those, fanboys of anything. I find the products I like and I will rep what I use, or whatever. But at the same time, I love to experiment and I love to compare and contrast and I like to have different stuff out there, and try different things. So I like to spread it around.
And it's cool because you're building a relationship maybe with Jared and Al and those guys. Like, they're so open-minded and they just want to produce good stuff. Like, they genuinely want the stuff to be in multiple different things. Like, they want you to try it and let them know. Like, they don't want to just see these pictures of, the perfect pie. He wants to know, hey, what kind of soil was this? What kind of soil was that? How does it look 3 years down the road? Like, they're just, they're doing all that stuff. And it's pretty cool, so.
Yeah, and I'm I guess I call myself a deer nerd. Like, I get into the stuff that a lot of hunters don't care about or don't need to know or whatever. But, that's kind of another reason that attracts me to the Vitalize is just, listen to Al talk. He's, genius. So
yes.
There's times where I just get enamored by it and just kind of roll with it. So I like to follow those people. If they're more educated than me in something, I want to listen and try to learn from them and try to gain as much as I can from them.
Yeah, dude, and that's – you. 'Cause because you want to be a better person next year. Like, that's like anything. Right. Like, I always, like, try to be – I want to be a better hunter at the end of 2025 than I was at the end of 2024. You know, exactly. And there's so much good information out there and stuff to help you learn that. I mean, dude, that's why it's so fun. Like, it's just like every year I'm like, man, I'm so pumped up for this fall. Like, I'm the most pumped up I've ever been. It's like, well, I kind of feel that way every year.
And exactly, yes. Well, every year is, you know, is new. You know, nothing is ever the same. It doesn't repeat itself. So that's why we get that anticipation, because we cannot guess what's going to happen. You know, there is no way to make it repeat itself over and over, and that's the joy of it, at least for me. It's always different. Every single hunt, every single day is different.
Yes, sir. Yes, yes, it is. So do you have any other, like, you know, we kind of went through quite a bit. You seem to have quite a plate full of stuff you're doing, but is there anything else you want to kind of touch on that you're kind of looking forward to or doing for this fall or this summer? Be that, like, a new habitat thing you're going to try for the first time or a new piece of equipment?
You know... I've been dabbling in them for years, you know, just small numbers, but air pruning beds for growing my own trees and bushes and all that kind of stuff. I've been getting into them big time the last few years, and I just see the benefit, and I'm really excited to see my, I don't even know how many seeds that I have going right now. Man, I got to be close to... Got to be close to 600 or 700 trees growing in my air pruning beds right now. But I'm really excited to get out with the kids and start putting them out, you know, in the fields and start foresting things and watching that change of, I collected these seeds from either right here on my property or very local areas, you know, grew them from seed, nursed them all the way up and then planted them. I think that's what I'm most excited for this year.
Start
seeing that. Yeah, yeah. The air pruning beds has been a lot of fun and a cool way to make some really cheap trees, you know.
Yeah, dude, that's cool. Well, man, didn't get me fired up to do more stuff. Hearing something like that is like, yeah, there's always something, and the excitement of that would be pretty cool. We have some walnuts. Not walnuts, American chestnuts my uncle got. Henry's going to plant those this year and see how those work. We've had them in the fridge all winter, so I maybe should have pulled them out a little sooner. But hearing you talk about it, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. The garage fridge has some of those in a jug that Henry wanted to do this year. So.
No, you're good, man. I actually just sowed almost 100 of them yesterday.
Same oh, perfect. Time.
Yeah, no, you're good. That's how I, you know, stratify my chestnuts as well. And same thing. I just pull them out once I start seeing, you know, 1-inch long radicals or so on a bunch of them. I start pulling them out and planting them. So
sweet. Well, I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I literally just did mine yesterday. So
nice. Well, hey, dude, I appreciate this call. I'm going to kind of cut it short. I got to be somewhere here in a little bit. So, but
no
thank
worries.
You, thank you for joining Michigan Wild and hopping on with a conversation with me again, man.
Thanks, Nate. I appreciate having me on.
Well, hey, I want to congratulate on you and your grueling turkey season and your and your hopefully really, really busy fall and summer.
Yeah,
sorry. Summer.
Yeah. Yep, I appreciate it. It's going to be a busy summer.
All right. Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of Michigan Wild. Go check out Jake on Facebook. He's got some really cool videos and some stuff of talking, like I said before, the red osier dogwood cuttings that he did and plant, and how he kind of architected his swamp. I mean, you can see the difference in, you know, proof's in the pudding with how good his falls have been. And, you know, you can see this video of him smacking this turkey. That was pretty cool. I'll have to pay attention and see this, see the switch and see what the bigger turkey that he should have shot. I kind of missed that the first time. So, but yeah, thanks, Jake. And you guys all know what to do. Get out there. Thank you.
Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers. For a rich, delicious experience, whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, 2 Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. 2 Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kid will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.